Bob, you said you didn't misbehave, and yet you tried to escape five times. Is that not misbehaving from the Germans' point of view? But you finally made it out by flying a German airplane back to Allied lines. To what extent did you think, uh-oh, I'm going to get shot down by my own guys?
David, I've got to tell you, I hate to admit this because a lot of people think I've done a lot of things, but you're looking at the dumbest blooming pilot that ever flew an airplane.
Yeah, right.
I got in an airplane, I escaped a couple of weeks. Nobody really successfully escaped from that Nordstalag 1 that I was in. I got outside a lot of times and got beat up and so forth, but nobody made it. We were always captured on the outside. But you, in order to get a project of your own, you had to be a grunt, which meant that you had to do the digging in the tunnels and you had to do the worst jobs in the world. And for instance, Clay Lacy, there's a film that's coming out. It's, I don't know when it'll hit the screens, but we saw the premiere the other day, the first end results. And Clay Lacy was at some location with me, and someone came up to Clay and said, you know, I was in that same prison camp with Bob Hoover. And he said, oh, you were? And he said, yeah. He said, I never saw anything like this in my life. We had a scheme that you had to work on all of these tough projects and go through whatever the consequences might have been before you would have permission to devise your own method of escape that you hoped would get you back to freedom. And the result was that on the committee, they came to me one day and said, you got a pretty responsible job. They're putting an extension to the prison camp back over in here, and they don't have any guards on that area. I had to create a diversion to get the attention of the tower gunners and all of the guards on the outside of the fence and create a diversion. Each day they would count us twice a day. Einsteiner down like this, and the German soldiers would go down in between our ranks and count noses. And there were so many people for each block of people. When I got there were 1,000 people. When I left, there were 10,000. But this went on every day, twice a day. And my responsibility was to create a diversion second to none. Well, I looked and found out that here was a barrel that collected the water off the roof of the buildings when we had rain or snow or whatever, and it melted. And it was used for fire purposes. It had a fire bucket thereby. Well, it hadn't been used. There were no fires or anything, and there was moss and, you know, just filthy stuff in the barrel. And I got the idea. I'm going to get in the back row of the block that I'm being in, and I will sneak back behind when everybody's standing at attention while we were telling us what we had to do or couldn't do. And then the American colonel, the senior person, would take over and tell us what he knew about the war that as it progressed from new prisoners that were coming in. And so it turns out that I had to grab this bucket and fill it up with this horrible, dirty water. And the Germans were dressed immaculately. I mean, they were dressed first class. And most of us were in rags, of course. And I sneaked back, got that bucket of water, and got back in line. And everybody's looking over at the Germans, their staff, and our top staff of people who were senior officers in the camp. And all of a sudden, I came running out from behind, And I had this bucket of dirty, ugly water. And here's this German standing there, attention boy in a magnificent looking uniform. I took this bucket of water and I put it right in his face. Well, pandemonium broke out. And boy, they couldn't shoot because we had so many of their soldiers counting noses and that kill their own people. And so I kept running in and out of our lines where the guards were. And they couldn't shoot at me because it killed their own people as well. And so all the diversion, everybody's attention got away from the fence where these fellows were going to, got 13 of them over the fence. And boy, I knew I had my winner coming up to have my own project. Well, all 13 got out. All 13 were captured the next day. So no one ever escaped while I was there until the last 2 weeks of the war when it was winding down. And I had dreamed of getting to an airfield where I could find a Focke-Wulf 190. There was a field not too far away. And so toward the end, we were told not to attempt an escape. And this was an edict by General Eisenhower, who was the commander of all forces in Europe. And it turned out that he had said, the war is coming to a close and we're winning and it's not worth the risk. Well, there were a handful of us. Out of the 10,000, there were 200 of us that hit the fence. I was the first to go. And I had two fellows with me who wanted to get out as bad as I did. And I hit the fence with them. And we had another diversion to get the attention away from us. The guards had deserted. So it was no big deal. It was not like the normal days. This was toward the end of the war. And the guards had deserted their post because we could hear the Russian cannons going off nearby. And I hit the fence, got over the fence, and the three of us were the first out. We went through the woods. We had to cross a body of water. It was on the Baltic Sea, you know. And we had to go across a body of water. Well, we didn't have a boat. We didn't have Mae West. We had nothing but these old ragged clothes we were shot down in. And they said, how are we going to get out? We're going to freeze to death. It was in the wintertime still. And so I said, well, while I'm in the woods here, I said, I saw some grapevines. I said, maybe we can get some more pieces of wood, put them together. And the one fella said, well, I can't swim. And I said, well, you're going to sit on, we'll make a raft of some kind if we can tie it up with these grapevines and hold the logs together. And you take all of our clothes and the other two of us will get naked and get the boat, it wasn't a boat, but a little barge across the water to the land on the other side. And so we all agreed on it. And I thought, well, I don't know if we can survive. The Baltic Sea is an awful cold body of water in the wintertime. And we made it and got to the other side, and our clothes were dry. We got dressed. And the first day we were starving to death, and we were hungry the whole time we were there. We never had enough to eat. And I dropped from 165 or 70 pounds down to about 118. And but we really needed some nourishment. Went into this farmhouse. I said, we got to go in here. We couldn't find anything. Went through fields thinking maybe some potatoes had been left when they were plowing it up for food, and we didn't find anything. And so I said, well, knock on the door and take our chances. And we were, I don't know, we had no idea where we were, no charts, no maps, no compasses or anything. Just looking up to the sky for where the sun was coming up and where it was setting and heading in the right direction. And so I knocked on the door, and this lady answered the door. And she was an old lady to me. I was probably about 22 at the time. And I told her, I said, we're starving to death, and if we could get some food from you and help us, I'd appreciate it if you could assist us. And I know food is short, but I'd like a piece of paper and a pencil so I can leave a message that when the Allied forces come through here, they'll treat you with kindness because you've helped us. Well, she didn't read what I wrote for her. She served us the first eggs we had had in all of that time. I hadn't had eggs in over a year. Anything of good nourishment. And she gave us potatoes and some eggs. And I got ready to leave and thanked her very much. And I'd already given her the note. She hadn't looked at it. And we left. And I shook hands with her. And we were going up this old dirt road from this farmhouse. And I heard this woman screaming. And I thought, what in the world happened to the lady? And I turned around, and she was running toward me and waving her arms. And I got up to her. And she said, I said, are you okay? She could understand English a little bit. And that's the way we were able to communicate. And she had the note in her hand that I had written. And she said, and tears were coming in her eyes. She said, I'm so glad I was able to help you. And I felt after reading this that you would need this more than anything I could do for you. And she gave me a pistol with 3 cartridges. And she said, I hope this will save you along your way in trying to get back to your friendly lines. And off we went.